Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 8 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for spring pre-registration is April 21st. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
Floodwaters have devastated homes, businesses, and farms in western Iowa. This hour, we'll take stock of the damage and the recovery efforts. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Today with IPR's state government reporter, Katerina Sestarek, in our State House Law Library in Des Moines. Katerina, hello to you.
Hi, Ben.
And we want to reach out to our listeners this hour. If you've been impacted by this year's floods in western Iowa, join us with the damage it's done to you, perhaps your crops, your business, your home. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. In just a moment, we'll hear from a resident of Pacific Junction, that's in southeast Iowa. His house is sounds like it's been completely lost. We'll hear from him in just a moment. But Katerina, to you, just over an hour ago, you were at a press conference held by Governor Reynolds. Governor Reynolds is planned to join us live here in about a half an hour, but you were at the press conference. What did she announce?
Yeah, so she's announced that she signed an executive order this morning to create a flood recovery advisory board to help coordinate recovery efforts after this catastrophic flooding that Iowa has seen in the Southwest. Over a month ago, this flooding started when there was a mix of snowmelt and frozen ground. Sorry, we're having some technical issues over here.
Mm-hmm. That's all right.
Some frozen ground, rain, rapidly warming temperatures triggered this flooding over a month ago. And now Reynolds has created this advisory board, and she's also calling on lawmakers to appropriate $15 million for a flood mitigation fund to go to some immediate flood control infrastructure needs, and then another $10 million in workforce housing tax credits to help accelerate housing improvements in affected areas. And there's been some conversation prior to this at the State House about what state lawmakers can or should do about flood recovery efforts. Two Democrats in the Iowa Senate had proposed a $50 million flood recovery package. That has not advanced at all since then. But now we have this plan from Governor Reynolds that it seems Republican leaders are in favor of advancing this session. And so we'll be hearing from some of the people involved in that.
All right. Very good. I think we've got your audio squared away a little bit higher level. We'll talk with lawmakers there. You and I, Katerina, in just a few minutes, Senator Jackie Smith and also Representative David Seek. But first of all, I mentioned we wanted to listen, talk with someone who has been affected firsthand. Doug Mayo joins us by phone. He's a resident of Pacific Junction. That's in southeast Iowa, a town of less than 500 people. Doug, welcome to our program. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you for joining us. You and your wife, Lisa, are retired. I understand you're unable and have for about a month unable to get back to your house. You're staying in Red Oak at a friend's house?
That's correct. And just a quick correction, this is southwest Iowa.
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you very much. I meant southwest. But so you are in Pacific Junction where your house is. March 17th, you were given evacuation orders. Take us back to that day. Did you see it coming? Was it a surprise?
Well, yes, it was a surprise. We did see that the level was up on the Missouri River. We had seen several days before that when we were in southeast Nebraska visiting our grandchildren, which we do on a regular basis. They live down by the Platte River.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty high, and it was running pretty hard, but we just kind of figured that was wouldn't affect us. We were better than 3 miles on the other side of the Missouri River. And as it turns out, that was probably about the biggest effect because of all the rain and the snow melt and so on. The water rose very quickly, and it was coming in from the Platte River so hard, it comes in at almost a right angle and just slammed into the Missouri and brought the levels up, and it started topping the levees all along there, all south of the new Highway 34 bridge. It was just running over like a bathtub that was overfilled. But we still thought we would be okay because we're more than 3 miles away, and the history has never really been any flooding from the river as far as Pacific Junction. We get a little bit of groundwater seeping up through the ground, and like in 2011 when there was a flood threat, we just got a little water up under the ground. But yeah, it was a surprise. The mayor and longtime residents all insisted it would never flood there. They'd never seen it flood. It just won't happen. And, well, it did.
And I understand you left. The floodwaters came into your town of Pacific Junction. How deep was the water in the town?
I don't know that I saw anything official. I did see one of the first pictures, videos that came out of there was somebody going down Main Street of the city videoing. They went by the community center, the fire station, and half a block from there is our house. And so our house was in the video, and at that point the water, which was this, was on the 18th, the water was about 2 to 3 inches below the top of our front door.
Wow.
And actually saw pictures, drone footage after that, where the water was about anywhere from a foot to 2 feet up the roof. So it got quite a ways up. So I would guess anywhere around our house, it had to be 10 to 12 feet.
Wow. Okay. So I'm very sorry. Your house permanently damaged. I don't know. What do you know about the condition of your house, condition of your town, and your neighbors' houses?
Right now, we're kind of in limbo. We have been. We were one of the few people that had flood insurance just because of the threat of 2011. We got flood insurance then, and we've just kept it. When I called the insurance company and the adjuster called me, they were ready to come out and look right away. And I told them, well, the house is underwater. You're going to have to wait. And I talked to the adjuster about every 3 days to tell them where we're at. They opened up the west side of town, which is probably a quarter to a third of the town, from the railroad tracks that dissect it north and south. That was opened yesterday, I believe. Yeah, yesterday. Because the water was down enough, people could get in. So some people got in and looked at their houses. We live on the east side of the tracks, where it still has anywhere from 2 to 3 feet of water around all the houses there. So we're still kind of in limbo. We just really can't proceed until the water's gone and we can get the insurance company and FEMA and everybody that has to come in and look and make decisions on what exactly we're going to do. But my opinion is it's a total loss. The water got so high, it drowned everything in the house. And pictures we've seen, which if anybody's seen pictures of flood damage in a house, it's pretty much a mess. So you've lost almost everything.
Right. Oh, I'm so sorry for you and your wife's loss of your home. What possessions are you have most sort of top of mind as you think about your flooded house?
Oh, I suppose it's family keepsakes and things from my career in the Air Force. I'll miss those, but then again, I took all that stuff for granted. Even though we had one room of the house that had that stuff all over the walls, we didn't really pay much attention to it, but now that it's gone, it's kind of like, gee, I guess I should have paid more attention. But, you know, that's the way it goes, and we were just happy that we got out okay. We left when they told us to get out, and it was within hours that the water just came rushing into town, and so we were happy that we got out okay. We had some place to go, and we are in a much better position than the average citizen of that town because we do have flood coverage, which most people don't. So,
Doug, who do you worry about most? Well, you know, your town is less than 500 people. Where everybody knows everybody pretty much. What residents are you most worried about? Of course, there are plenty of residents, I imagine, without flood insurance.
Yeah, my biggest concern that I would think the toughest thing is going to be for older people, low income. You know, they're going to have a tough time with this. A lot of them, they probably don't have the resources to rebuild their house, and a lot of them really can't afford to be moving, but they're in a situation where they're going to have to do something. So, yeah, I feel for them. There's a lot of people in our position. Actually, my wife and I are very lucky that we both retired in our mid-50s. So we've been retired about 7 years. And we both have government retirements. Hers is state, mine's federal. So we have a good income besides starting Social Security. So we're okay, and we are insured and so on, but there are a lot of people that were living paycheck to paycheck or just surviving on, like, Social Security and so on.
Mm-hmm. Doug, before we say goodbye, you've given us a good picture, horrendous picture of the damage there in the southwest Iowa town of Pacific Junction. You're still not back there. What have you thought, a few words about the response to the flood from the state or otherwise? What has made its presence felt in terms of disaster response in your part of the state?
Well, actually, FEMA showed up pretty quick. I mean, you could register with them right away as soon as it was declared a federal disaster. So that they responded pretty quick. There is a lot of people. There's a lot of misinformation running around on Facebook. I know it's confusing people. As best I can tell from FEMA, that's what a lot of people are going to have to depend on. It's really tough to get a feel for those other people because they have that's what they're depending on is FEMA. I mean, that's going to be their big thing. Ours is waiting on the insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And FEMA has done some for us, but since we have insurance, it's going to be mostly through our insurance company. FEMA will pretty much be down the line for us. They've pretty much indicated that. The biggest positive response we've gotten here is from local religious and community groups. We've had the local churches have put up, have been serving three meals a day since this has happened, and they still are. As a matter of fact, we're sitting outside the disaster recovery center. Just didn't want to go in yet because I didn't know how noisy it'd be in there.
Mm.
And we've had like a Lions Club from Exira, Iowa, and I think that's probably, what, better than 80 miles from here? And they came down and they had volunteers came down and served lunch one day.
Wow. Doug Mayo, we have to say goodbye, but that must be a great feeling to feel the community chipping in also from outside southwest Iowa.
Yeah, it's great. The local response has been pretty good.
Okay, Doug Mayo, we wish you and your wife, Lisa, well. Thank you for giving us a picture from flood-stricken the Pacific Junction area in southwest Iowa. Doug, take care.
Okay, thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestarek. As Katarina there at the State House Law Library, we have two lawmakers with us to react to that and tell us about the flood damage in their districts. We have Senator Jackie Smith, a Democrat from the Sioux City area, and Representative David Seek, a Republican from Glenwood. Governor Kim Reynolds to join us in about 15 minutes. But let's start with you, Representative Seek. I understand this is Mills County, Pacific Junction. This is your district.
Yes, it is my district.
Okay. You are also a farmer here. We just heard, you know, the total loss of a house, likely most of the houses in Pacific Junction. Give us an idea of the damage that you've surveyed and come to understand in your district.
I've lived south of in Council Bluffs and south of Council Bluffs my entire life and farmed on the river bottom since I was about 13 years old. I would have to say that this is probably the largest event that I have seen. But prior to that, the flood of 52, my grandfather told me stories about it. So this had devastating impacts, and a lot of it was in the flood of 11, Pacific Junction and everything north of there, the levees held. But because of the Platte and the amount of water it was carrying, roughly, I guess, close to 200,000 cubic feet per second, pounding in, like Mr. Mayo said, straight into the Missouri River, it was just nothing could take it. And so the levees over top, they breached, especially right across from the Platte, and that's what probably filled from Cade Creek north up to the top of the weak point of Cade Creek and pushed the water into Pacific Junction. And I would say that the residents of Pacific Junction are facing some pretty dire straits as far as their houses when they do get back in there. I've seen some of the flooded houses along the river and stuff that kind of have dried out, and it pretty well trashes the inside of them, and mm-hmm. things that you'd never expect are done. So not only that, but then Hamburg in the south end of my district, probably had between, 40 to 50% of the city go underwater, if not more. I've heard as much as 2/3. And they're facing the same stuff. They're a little ahead of Pacific Junction. Some of the water's left. They've actually started some cleanup, and there's piles all over outside. The state is moving in today with DOT trucks and DNR trucks and starting to move all that to the landfills because it'll become a health hazard pretty quick. But it's going to be a long process down there. And the residents of PJ, Pacific Junction, are just starting to get back. Like you said, the west side is in yesterday. I think some of the residents in the east side probably walked in and looked at their houses, too.
Yeah. Emotional to go back to a house so devastated by flood. Senator Jackie Smith, let's swing up to the northwest part of the state there in Woodbury County. Give us an idea of the flood impact there.
Sure. Well, the flood mainly hit one of our towns called Hornick, Iowa, and the water came in so quickly that it just went right over the top of the levees. So houses that had never had water, had water. There was a gentleman I talked to. He was 98 years old, had lived in Hornick for 68 years. It was the first time he was flooded out. The day that I met up with Representative Seek, we went to Hamburg, Glenwood, Malvern, Council Bluffs, and then on that Saturday, the next day, I did go to Hornick. I was a county supervisor in Woodbury County in 2011 and saw firsthand, from a local perspective, all the coordination that goes on to handle an emergency. So when there was flooding, while much of it was outside of my district, I just felt a calling to go. And I was telling Representative Seek before we started today that, that was a time that we really did gather information, talk to people, and it was bipartisan that day. Everyone, we took down our covers, we came together, we did our jobs of what we were elected to do. And no one once asked any one of us what party we were from. So I'm very proud of that effort. On that day. And what I saw, there were 800 plus homes and businesses that were affected. The Hamburg Superintendent of Schools was asking for 100 FEMA trailers. Hamburg and Glenwood were basically operating without water. The rural hospital in Hamburg, had porta potties. I can't imagine the schools had no water and porta potties. And we heard a lot of comments from the businesses that day. FEMA comes in and does some assistance for individuals. The SBA does some loans, but they're still, the interest rate is fairly high. So not only were there individual homes and people that were affected, businesses were wondering, if they would be able to rebuild or if they would have to relocate.
All right. So Governor Reynolds announced this plan this morning. I want to go to Representative Seek. What do you think of Governor Reynolds having this flood recovery advisory board and then also the funding that we had mentioned earlier in the show? Do you think that will go a long way towards helping right now?
Yeah, I think the governor's done two things. First, she's coordinating with Nebraska, Kansas, and Missouri. And I think that's a huge effort because we do have to get on the same page. Offutt Air Force Base just redid their levee. They wanted to build it 3 foot higher, but they weren't willing to rebuild the levee on the Iowa side 3 foot higher across from us. And so they built it at the same level, and this flood took all that out. So that coordination helps. This flood plan that the board that she set up to look at that, her board will be a great asset as far as coordinating all the dollars from all the different buckets, whether it's state or federal or local dollars. And I also think it'll get to the crux of how we fix this stuff. And she said over and over again, we're going to fix this so it doesn't happen again. We're going to work with the state so we're all on the same page. And I think that'll be a huge, huge importance to moving forward. So I think this, and as far as the money goes, I think we're going to take a lot of money. But yet, a lot of these people haven't even got back in their houses. So as we move forward, I think there will be more money available, but this is a good start. So.
And Senator Smith, I know you and another Democratic senator had proposed a $50 million flood recovery package. So how does what the governor's proposed compare to that? And do you plan to continue advocating for what you've proposed?
Well, first off, I'm hoping as she puts together her, when the governor puts together her working groups, that she really will continue the bipartisan effort that we had that very day that we toured the flood areas. You know, I'm just going to wait and see what money comes up. I noticed her fund, it looks like $15 million is going to run through the mitigation board. Flood mitigation board. We had proposed Senator Hogan, myself, $24 million, so it's less than that. But our initial proposal really was just to get the conversation started. I walked away that day feeling that the state did have to step in and you know, take up some slack. I didn't think FEMA would offer enough assistance. This seems to be, you know, flooding seems to happen more often in the last, 10 years or 15 years than what it should. So going forward and getting us all on the same page is really going to take everyone, both sides of the aisle. And I think that's what will make Iowa strong.
Representative Seek, let me ask you, you're as a fourth generation Iowa farmer who you just said you haven't seen anything like this before. We've heard a lot about crops being stored, more so even because of the dip in commodity prices. What are you hearing about damage to stored crops, to everything a farmer concerns him or herself with?
Yeah, well, first of all, we asked Secretary Naig what Iowa's position was on stored grain. And we were actually this year 8% under on corn and 78% over on soybeans. So partially, it just depends on the markets and when farmers want to sell. So that is part of the equation. So they're probably... this river bottom, there was more grain out there than probably would have been out there. But, you know, we were coming off all this wet weather. We'd had a extremely wet last year. So we had, the roads were already impacted. So they couldn't move a lot of grain. And they couldn't move any grain when they got wind that this was, you know, going to come so fast. So I think that played into this. As far as the crops go, we had a lot of farmers that had soybeans and corn still in the field out there, because they couldn't harvest before winter came, and there was just everything was so wet, and there was so much snow that there were crops out there. I personally, had 200 acres of soybeans, and after the flood, it's gone, so I no longer have to worry about harvesting that, because once the water's gone over it, it's no longer harvestable. They won't take it because of the contamination. So I think there's a huge role, amount of grain that's lost, the amount of road work we have to do, what's going to happen this year as far as prevented plant, what the farmers can do. So, yeah, it's going to be an ongoing battle. And then if they don't fix the levees in the next year, they have to be a 50-year coverage or longer, they're going to be messed up for next year. We won't have any crop insurance. So.
Please stay with us, Representative David Seek and Senator Jackie Smith. We'll be back in just a moment. Also, Governor Kim Reynolds due to join us live after the break. We're talking about how the floodwaters have devastated farms, businesses, homes, taking stock of the damage and also the recovery efforts in the short term and how to prevent this in the future. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestaric, back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 8 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for spring pre-registration is April 21st. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with IPR state government reporter Katarina Sestaric at the State House Law Library. Senator Jackie Smith of the Sioux City area, Democrat, with us as well. Representative David Seek, a Republican from Glenwood, talking about the floodwater devastation. Homes, businesses, farms in western Iowa taking stock of the damage and the recovery efforts, and joining us from the State House Law Library for a few minutes. We're very pleased to announce we have Governor Kim Reynolds in front of the microphone. Governor Reynolds, welcome back to our program.
Hi, I'm really pleased to be here.
You had a press conference not too long ago this morning. You signed an executive order establishing a flood recovery advisory board to coordinate this flood response. Lawmakers, you called on to appropriate $15 million for flood mitigation, another $10 million for the next fiscal year for workforce housing tax credits for the affected areas. Going forward, what do you see as the biggest challenges?
Well, right now, our biggest challenges are four catastrophic breaches in the levee system. And that's where we have to start, because we still have inflow of water coming in. And so until we can get those breaches plugged, which I'm sure, I don't know if they've already talked about it, so I've missed some of the conversation ahead of time. But when you talk about a breach that's 72 feet deep and 500 feet long, and a lot of them are even bigger than that. And so we can't really begin to assess the damage as well as start to repair the levee system until we can plug the holes and stop the inflow. And so the Corps has committed to plugging those four largest breaches. It'll probably take a year to get that done, but in the interim, we can start to do some improvements in flood protection, short-term improvements like drainage and ditching in Pacific Junction, increase the height for Ditch 6 at Hamburg, start to provide our businesses some certainty that collectively we are going to work together and really think about how we repair this levee system for the long term, so that we don't, you know, we can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results. We have to think about this differently. And that's really part of what this advisory board will be tasked with.
Governor, a few weeks ago, you estimated $1.6 billion in damage from the flooding. Now, it seems that might be a low estimate. And now you're proposing for now, this while we're waiting for federal funding to become available, this $15 million for immediate flood infrastructure needs. How far do you think that can go in the short term? And do you think that will have to be expanded in terms of state funding in the future?
Well, it could, and I'm not ruling any of that out, but it is a balance. And that's why, as you heard this morning at the press conference, it is absolutely critical that Congress, the Senate, they act and we get the okay for the funding. I even said in the presidential declaration that we just got approved, I said to date, based on the assessments that we have, it's $1.6 billion. But as we start to uncover the levee system and just the damages that we're looking at, that is going to be on the low end. And we indicated that in the report. So I based the $15 million, which has carryover language, so it's out of the ending balance in fiscal year 19. But that will carry over into 20, and then we'll be able to also, we think we can use the state revolving fund also as another piece of revenue for non-point infrastructure, and so there's some funding there that we think we'll have access to, as well as the Department of Transportation really starting to look at some of the bridge on Highway 2. Dave is a good example of that. That's a significant pinch point. Even the Corps has recognized that. I think at the meeting we had last Monday, it became extremely clear that if we don't get that fixed, every levee up and down the system is impacted by that, or at least five. And, you know, they can't get Corps certified if we don't do something with that. That impacts their ability to get certified as well. So, and then in addition to that, I asked for $10 million in the Workforce Housing Tax Credit to help with the impacted counties that have received individual assistance. There's five, but it's still open, so more counties can be added to that. And I think that's an important component.
The flooding started over a month ago. Why are you taking these steps now?
Well, what I said this morning is I'm not just taking them now, but really what I'm doing is formalizing what we've been doing. And so I just think as we move forward and you look at we are in for a long haul here. The Iowans and farmers and businesses and communities are so vulnerable right now because we have a levee system. What is it? 250 miles of levee that's been compromised. And so it's what we've been doing, but we needed to formalize it. One of the task force is finance, because as we indicated, there's so many different buckets that we can get funding from. We want to make sure that we're coordinating that and being strategic. And, you know, the state has a role, local governments have a role, and so does the federal government. So we need to make sure that this is maybe our work match in the requirements, but they still need to do their part as well.
Senator Smith here, along with Senator Hoag, two Democrats in the Senate, proposed a $50 million flood recovery package for the state. The first part of that, which would have been a little less than $1 million to study the causes of the flood, they proposed it as an amendment in the Senate. It got voted down by Republicans. Do you think the state should be studying how this flood happened?
Well, you know, first of all, this was just, I mean, it was a perfect storm. It was unregulated tributaries that were coming in. It was ground that was frozen. We had extensive rain. We had an extensive snowfall. So, of course, that's always part of it, taking a look at what we can do differently. But that's what I said. We can't continue to do the same thing and expect different results. We need to use the latest technology. Maybe we look at the borrow or the materials that go into the levee. Maybe we don't have them in the right place. But it starts also when we work with the Corps to make sure, and this is what four governors are committed to really driving for the long term, and that is when we talk about the managing the Missouri, the flood control and people and communities needs to be the number one priority. And if we do that, we believe everything else will take care of itself. So that's already being done. It's part of the conversation going forward. But I have to focus right now on short term, and that short term means we get those breaches plugged and we start to take a look at what the damage is as we're simultaneously in recovery mode as well.
Governor Reynolds, I know you have only a couple of minutes before you move on from the Stenhouse Law Library. Let me ask you this, though. You mentioned that it's a concerted effort, state and county, but also the federal disaster recovery assistance is essential here, and we know that's been tied up in Congress. What have been your communications with members of Congress, perhaps with the president, to get this federal disaster assistance approved and on its way to very needy areas, such as in Iowa?
Mm-hmm. Well, we can't wait. I just said, you know, we're vulnerable. This has to happen now. We need to provide some certainty to these communities, to Iowans, to our farmers, to let them know that we are committed to rebuilding and recovery. And they're a significant piece of that. So please, I'm talking to everybody. This is not partisan. We all have to work together on this.
What has been your communication with Washington, though?
Get it done.
Who have you spoken with?
I've done it in every press conference that I've had an opportunity to be in front of, four governors, which was bipartisan. Governor Kelly from Kansas is a Democrat. It's all of us. We recognize that, you know, we are committed to this. We're going to stay engaged. But we all stood there and said, we need Congress to ask. This isn't a partisan issue. This is about putting lives back together. This is about an extremely vulnerable area of the state with the levee damage that we've seen. And we need to move on this. And so, you know, we can do the short term and we can do some of the improvements, you know, to start to provide some of that certainty. But we need to know that they are committed and that they need to get the funding approved.
Okay, Governor Reynolds, and I understand you have to leave. We want to thank you very much for stepping in to be part of our conversation this hour.
Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestarik, Governor Kim Reynolds. They're live from the State House Law Library. That's also where Katarina is. And our two lawmakers, Senator Jackie Smith, a Democrat from Sioux City, Representative David Seek of Glenwood, a Republican. Final few minutes to tie up some loose ends, discuss some things that we haven't yet talked about, and enjoy your calls if you've been affected by this year's flood. 1-866-780-9100. Let's get a quick caller on. We want to talk also with the Army Corps of Engineers, but first a quick caller. Laura is with us in Des Moines. I have to ask you to make it quick, Laura. We're trying to put a lot of things in the final 10 minutes of the program. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I will make it quick. And I think probably pretty much everybody in some way has been affected by the flooding here in Iowa. We all know someone who has. I'm in Des Moines, and I know there's been a lot of flooding of homes here and breaches of creeks and things. I think it's entirely irresponsible for our governor and the GOP-led legislature not to even discuss climate change. If we just keep this on defense and fixing things as they break, we're gonna lose out. It's gonna cost too much money. Now's a chance for our governor to be a leader in climate change infrastructure. Because these things are not gonna stop happening, they're just gonna get worse.
Laura in Des Moines, thank you very much. Let's put that to our lawmakers, Representative Seek there. Have there been any conversations about climate change happening now and progressing here in Iowa and the role they play in this plays in the floods?
I think that there's been a lot of things going on as far as climate change and that being the specific cause for any one event. I have to go back to look at like the flood of 1881. It was much similar to this event where it was frozen ground, lots of snowpack, lots of water. I was doing some reading and, you know, people got up on Sunday and went to church, and Sunday afternoon they watched their church go down the river in South Dakota. So to say that any one event or the series of events is climate change. I know the Corps has looked at this and tried to understand it, but I don't think that there's any direct correlation right now to that point. But I'll wait to see. They're the ones that spend millions of dollars looking at it and trying to understand what's going on in the river system, and I'm not here to judge that. So
okay, before we go to our Army Corps of Engineer representative, Senator Smith, you feel the same way? Is it appropriate that climate change has not really been a part of this discussion in Des Moines?
No, I think climate change needs to be a greater part of the discussion. I was just looking through my papers here. I can't find it. I know in the last 20 years, heavy torrential rains have increased 37%. I wanted to give you where I got that stat, but you can call me later, I guess, and I'll give it to
right.
you. But and we have a lot of examples of where the weather is just not what it used to be. The 500 flood is occurring every 10 years. So until we're willing to at least have that be part of the discussion, it doesn't have to drive all of it, I don't think we'll get long-term flood mitigation. And it's a tough conversation.
Let's add to our conversation before the hour ends, Ted Streckfuss. Streckfuss is a deputy district engineer with the Omaha District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Ted, welcome to the program, joining us by phone.
Good morning. How are you today?
Yes. Hello. Welcome to you. Thank you. Ted, you're responsible, I'm reading, for the execution of all program and project management within the district. So this is your area. We just heard the governor describe four breaches, 75-foot deep, 500 feet wide. What kind of task is this, if that's accurate, according to what you see there? What kind of task is this to plug those breaches?
It is accurate, and I will tell you that the scope of the damage and devastation is significant, as all your previous talkers have talked about. Right now, in terms of a small bit of tangible good news, we were successful in awarding a construction contract to begin filling that breach that the governor was talking to. We awarded that contract over the weekend, and we will begin having a construction contractor work in the near term. Desire to have that completed over the next month or two, recognizing that in addition to that, we have three other significant breaches that are diverting river flow that we need to get after in terms of plugging those.
How effective can these temporary repairs be when more flooding is expected on the Missouri River this spring? Will it hold up? Will it be done before more rain comes?
It's going to be a long-term effort to bring the system back to its pre-flood condition. It's going to be multifaceted with respect to what we need to accomplish. Obviously, the first thing we need to do is ensure that the river's back in its original channel. So that involves a plugging of those four major breaches that are diverting river flow. In conjunction with that, we had nearly 50 breaches on the levee system from south of the mouth of the Platte down to our area responsibility near rural Nebraska. So significant and substantial damage. We will begin to obviously repair those efforts, working transparently with the state, with other users and stakeholders of the system, to ensure that as we prioritize our efforts, that we're going to be meeting the needs of the community. Your question about, is this going to provide immediate flood risk reduction? The short answer is no. We need to get the breaches fixed first, and then we're going to move in to provide a minimal level of protection that will prevent communities and significant public infrastructure as quickly as possible. And then that will transition into the longer term effort, which is the substantial investment of dollars in order to bring the system back to pre-flood condition.
Ted Streckfuss, the Army Corps of Engineers has, you've I'm sure heard, been criticized for the way it manages the Missouri River and its tributaries. How do you respond to that criticism?
How I respond to the criticism, and mostly that criticism revolves around a statement that the Corps is not prioritizing flood risk reduction or flood control as its authorized purpose. Many people are aware that the Missouri River system, as authorized by Congress, supports eight authorized purposes. And we all, that's the drinking water and water supply, navigation, hydropower, and several others. The point being, during a significant event like this, during the high water flows of last year, we do have 8 authorized purposes. However, flood control is the number one priority during these high water events. Mm-hmm. So we operate the system in order to ensure that we have life safety as our highest priority to prevent any damages to the extent that we can with respect to flood control.
In hindsight, could it have been avoided with different action, different investments?
For this specific flood event, absolutely not. This was an event that was driven by unregulated flows. Unregulated flows are flows that do not have federal infrastructure like dams on those river systems. Those rivers come in below the lowest dam on the Missouri River system, which is up at Gavin's Point in Yankton, South Dakota. The majority of these rivers come in below that point, so you had all of the unregulated flow. I think Mr. Sieg talked specifically about the Platte River discharging nearly 200,000 cubic feet per second. That's an order of magnitude greater than what that river will normally carry. So those are significant issues, and again, this perfect storm that came together to provide this unprecedented amount of flow in the river system that was not designed to carry it.
We've heard the governor of Iowa and the governors of other affected states sort of calling on the Army Corps to allow states to have more input in the Missouri River management process. Is there anything that any takeaways from this flood where the Corps is thinking things should be done differently in the future?
Well, I think I'm looking forward to having a robust engagement and transparent engagement with the governors of the affected states. We've already had the opportunity to meet with them on the 3rd of April. We have another meeting forthcoming with them. We have a field hearing coming up with Congress in a few short days. It's an opportunity for the Corps of Engineers to, again, to transparently share with those stakeholders how the system is operated and to engage in a dialogue and conversation.
Has the federal money funding to the Corps of Engineers been adequate? Do you see it adequate, or do you need it to see it, a need for an increase in the future?
It has been adequate to date. As we have moved forward with, for example, we have provided some support at the community of Pacific Junction to provide a ring dike around their water treatment facility. Those are important first steps. This levee breach closure that we was funded by the federal government. Those funds have been forthcoming. From a longer-term perspective, is there a need for an emergency supplemental to support the Midwest in its recovery efforts? I believe that there is a need for that, and I look to our various congressional delegations to be able to work together to provide that funding for this dire need.
Okay. Ted Streckfuss of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, thank you for joining us these few minutes.
Thank you.
Final word to from our lawmakers before we say goodbye in less than 2 minutes. Representative Sieg, leave us with your thoughts on where we're going forward.
Well, forward is the unknown. I think there still could be more events this summer. I mean, we're hearing that there's still an enhanced risk of flooding. I just want to say that my thoughts and prayers go out to everybody in Iowa that's been had problems and devastation from this flood, not only in Southwest Iowa, but along the Mississippi and all the tributaries and rivers in between. And that I also want to thank the people of Iowa. They're very, very great people. That all the outreach and all the money and all the help and supplies that have poured in is just amazing. And that's why we're Iowa. So looking forward, we'll see what happens. And we hope that we can get all these situations under control.
Senator Jackie Smith, will you conclude with a few thoughts?
Sure. I'm just going to echo what Governor Reynolds said, that flooding certainly is not a partisan issue, and I look forward to a bipartisan plan of action going forward. And I also want to give a local shout out to the local governments. I have been wanting to do that. They do such a fabulous job with their emergency management, and the county supervisors, the city councils, they're the boots on the ground. And you can just go in and see that it is well organized, and they're there to help the people. They do a really good job.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Jackie Smith, Representative David Seiko. On the way out, I'll give a little information from FEMA. The deadline for FEMA assistance from these floods is May 22nd, although FEMA encourages residents to file for assistance as soon as possible. Survivors may be eligible for rental assistance, limited home repair, or replacement of some personal property loss. And if you'd like to find out more, go to the web, disasterassistance.gov. Disasterassistance.gov. Katerina Sestarek, unless you had something else, I guess we'll wind up the show. This will be something we'll cover the aftermath of in the coming weeks and months, the devastation, and indeed our thoughts are with those affected by these floods. Thank you so much to all those at the State House Law Library. River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Emily Woodbury, and help today from Stephanie Nobrega. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to take a look at vaping, if you know what that is. The Surgeon General has said electronic cigarettes use among young people has increased to epidemic proportions. We'll talk about that tomorrow. The rise of vaping, how the health risks of e-cigarettes compare with traditional combustible cigarettes. That's tomorrow on the program. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.